You're listening to an edited version of the live Voices of Montana statewide radio program. Find us on Facebook and subscribe for further podcasts wherever you get your audio on demand. I'm Tom Schultz, host of the program. Thanks for joining us, and please feel free to contact me at studio@voicesofmontana.com.
Well, how about that? There's still some basketball going on. The DCC Bucks are vying for a national title. One of 24 teams, their first-round matchup tomorrow. Joe Peterson, their head coach, going to size up that matchup against Indian River State on Tuesday. Also, Bridget Malum, the Montana Chamber of Commerce, he's going to size up how this legislative session is going from the perspective of Montana's businesses and industries. And then there is something called a 30 by 30 land grab executive order from the Biden administration involving millions of acres of public land. We'll talk about that today in a very busy Monday Voices of Montana.
It's time for the fastest hour in radio. From Montana, for Montana, Voices of Montana with Tom Schultz. Call in today at 866-627-5483 or text a comment or question to 781-627-5483. Now, here's your host, Tom Schultz.
Monday, can't trust that day. I hope you're doing well. Hope you had a great weekend. Appreciate you joining us here today. 22 years, two decades. It might even be 23 now. You know, after a while, you do tend to lose count of exactly when. That's why we speak in generalities. Two decades strong, working on three. Very good to have you here and making us part of your Montana mornings, an objective perspective. That's Voices of Montana. Yep, Tom Schultz alongside. So I do appreciate being able to catch up with Joe Peterson here a little bit earlier today. Going to get right to that because before too long, it's a recorded interview. Right now, they're kicking off practice ahead of their game tomorrow at 9 o'clock this time, Mountain Time, in Hutchinson, Kansas. One of 24 junior college teams vying for a national title. So as that is set to go, holy cow, I got to get right to that. I will in just a bit, too. Bridger Malum's going to join us from the Montana Chamber of Commerce. And then Chuck Deneau, too, United Property Owners of Montana, talking about a rally plan for Lewistown tonight to voice some concerns over this executive order from the Biden administration to create this 30-30 program. It's a land grab. It's what it is. So that ahead here today. But first off, let's get going with DCC Bucks head coach Joe Peterson ahead of their first-round matchup in the Junior College National Championships tomorrow.
The DCC Bucks, 23-2 record. They take that into Hutchinson, Kansas for the NJCAA Division I Championship Tournament. Fifth-year head coach Joe Peterson joins us here this morning on Voices of Montana. Coach, thank you. I appreciate that. Congratulations. You know, I'm looking at those wins, 100 wins in those five seasons. That math tells me that's over 20 a year. So, you know, as we talk about the Bucks this year, you know, why this team? Why this year to the NJCAAs?
That is a great question, you know, because when you look back in the history of Dawson Community College basketball over 63 years, we've had great players, we've had great coaches, we've had really good teams that have come really close. But somehow, some way, this year's team managed to do it. And the crazy thing is it's a bunch of freshmen. We really only have two guys that returned from last year's championship team, and everybody else is freshmen. And I don't know, there's just something about them. We've really embraced the whole COVID and all the challenges that came from that, with the season getting altered and with practice times and all of that. And I think they've really just embraced the mentality of each and every day pound on the stone. And hey, if we get a chance to be in the gym today, let's make the most of that chance. Let's enjoy it. Let's have fun. Let's get better. And they've just been doing that ever since we got to school in August. And I think it's really paid off, because they've come together. And they play really well together. They play really hard. They play tough. And I don't think they're afraid of the moment. They really rise to the occasion. And it doesn't matter if we're in a gym playing by ourselves, scrimmaging each other, or if we're playing one of the best teams in the country, like Indian Hills last week and Indian River this week. They're just the same. They're the same guys, and they play the same way, and they enjoy playing.
You gotta love coaching a team like that. So where's your leadership come from? Where's your scoring come from when you need a board, when you need a defensive stop? Talk about this team a little bit from that standpoint.
Yeah, our leadership, definitely Charles Lampton, one of our returning sophomores, along with Kel Schwarz. Those two guys have provided a lot of leadership. I think they learned a lot last year from the guys that they played with. We had some great leaders and great character and chemistry last year. But then another freshman that's really been a leader for us is Michael Jock. He's really come in, and he just has this calming, I don't know, soothing kind of personality where he gets along with everybody. He's never too high, never too low. And and he really provides great leadership and stability for us. As far as scoring goes, I think that's one thing that makes us so good is we got 10 guys that play a lot of minutes, and really it's a different guy every game that steps up. You know, we got six, seven, eight guys that are averaging, 7 or 8 points or more a game. We don't have anybody that's, scoring 20 a game, but we got a bunch of guys that can do it. So if they take one option away, we got somebody else that steps up. And I think that's one thing that makes us so dangerous is because you don't know where it's going to come from night in and night out. But on the defensive end and rebounding wise, Charles Lampton, our big guy in the middle, is kind of the one that gets that key block that protects the rim, that really makes it difficult on opposing teams to score on us. And he comes up with a lot of rebounds, especially the big ones when we need them.
Got to be a real challenge to kind of recruit at this level, because as I look at it, there are 450 some, junior college basketball teams out there, 200 plus at the Division I level. And finding these, are they all diamonds in the rough, so to speak? Talk about the recruiting process.
Yeah, I think, we're probably a little different than a lot of other junior college teams. I think we get a lot of guys that are just overlooked that for one reason or another, maybe they played at a smaller school or just didn't get seen. Maybe they're a little too skinny or a little too short, or they're just not quite there yet. We get a lot of those guys that are really, really talented and really good, but are overlooked for one reason or another. And, so we got to be really good at evaluating. And, when we watch film or we go watch them in person, just to try to look at some of the natural abilities and talents and so on. But we really focus, too, a lot on their basketball IQ, as well as just how hard they play. Because if they understand the game and they play hard, we can put weight on them. We can improve their jump shot. We can, we can teach them how to play defense. We can do a lot with them if they have those two ingredients. And so we've had a lot of luck going into Texas and finding guys that are just overlooked. There's just so many good players down there. We've had a lot of luck with Montana kids through the years. We've had some really, really good players, all conference type of players that have come from Montana that just have been overlooked a little bit. So it's an interesting game recruiting at the junior college level, and it's hard because you're recruiting a ton every year. At the four-year level, sometimes you only have to sign a couple of guys, but at the junior college level, it seems like every year you have to sign. Usually it's about 8 or 9, sometimes a little more than that, sometimes a little less, but it's definitely a challenge.
And I bet you don't get to Florida that often either.
Our budget is not very big.
right. Sure. Indian River State College, they're from that area. There's a lot of good athletes over there as well, but as I look at what the Warriors do, it seems like, they probably shoot maybe more threes. Well, they do shoot more threes than you guys. You guys maybe get to the line a little bit. Your rebound about the same. Your scoring's about the same. I think your defense, it could, match up. I guess you never know until you're on the court. It looks like it's a little bit better. But talk about Indian River State College.
Yeah, they're similar to us in a lot of ways. They've never been to the national tournament either, so it's kind of fun that we get to face off against each other in the first game. They're a tough, hard-nosed team. They defend pretty well and get after you. They'll rebound well and get on the floor, and they just hustle and they play hard. But I think the big difference is they really shoot the ball really well from the three-point line. They got a few guys that can just absolutely light it up, and so we're gonna have to do a great job, kind of like we did against Indian Hills. And even like we did against North Dakota State College of Science in the region championship, is we just got to make sure that we don't let their three-point shooters get open looks that get their rhythm and get them going. I think if we can run them off the line and we can contest all of those threes, they'll still make some. They're going to shoot 25 to 30 of them a game, so they'll still make some. But if we can hold them to a lower percentage, make them a little less efficient, I think we really have a good chance. But when they start draining those threes and get going that way, I think they really feed off of that, and that brings them energy, and that makes them play harder, rebound harder, and so on. So, yeah, I think a big key for us is to not allow them to get going from the three-point line.
Yeah, strong defensive effort can frustrate the other team. But, I think you and I had chatted a little while ago. You both kind of like to get out and run a little bit, yep. And that can lead into the Warriors game a little bit, can it?
It can, yeah, it can. I think most junior college teams like to do that. You watch these games down here at the national tournament, the level of athleticism is just ridiculous. I mean, it's – you know, it's very comparable to what you see at the NCAA Division I level. It's a little more polished at that level. It's a little bit more wilder at the junior college level, but teams like to play fast. They like to get up and down, especially if you got the athletes and you got the players that can do it. So I think our game will be a pretty fast-paced game. We just got to make sure that in that pace, we're not giving up those open threes. We're not letting them get going and get their rhythm from there. We're definitely not going to slow it down, I'll tell you that.
Okay. you can play defense as fast as you can play offense, too.
Yep, that's right.
First time in school history the men's team has made the jump to nationals. You know, that's pretty very significant. It's and kind of heady a little bit. How does a team embrace this moment, like off the court, but at the same time focusing through it so it's not an on-court distraction with the pressure and stuff?
Yeah, what we try to do and what we've done all year long, even with our scrimmages in the fall, even games where there was no fans, up to our championship games that we played in the last few weeks here, we just try to keep the routine the same. You know, we eat our pregame meal at the same time, and we have the same prep for each team that we play, and our warm-ups are the same. So just get them that rhythm. That doesn't matter where you're playing or who you're playing. There's some comfort level, I think, in that routine and so on. And I think, you know, the message I gave to them when we qualified and we got our seating a week ago and we met on Monday before practice, as I said, you know, this is one of those crazy years, you know, I mean, probably the craziest year of all time in junior college basketball with COVID, all the changes and schedules and all that kind of stuff. None of these teams have played much out of their conference. So they basically have just played their own teams within their conference. And so the rankings and the ratings and the seedings and all that stuff, I mean, nobody really knows how good these teams are.
Right.
or how bad they are, really. You know, some of these leagues may not be as good as they normally are. And so you might think a team is really good, but they may not be that good. And so I said this year, probably more than any other year, is really, truly wide open that anybody can win it. There's 24 teams left in the tournament, and one team has got to win it. So my thought was, why not Dawson? Why not Montana? Why not us? Why can't we be the one to win it?
Yeah, why not? There is no reason why not, huh?
Exactly. Yeah,
you've had a lot of support. I know that you've given your glory to God. Appreciate that as well. You had a lot of support in Montana and the of course the Glendive and surrounding community. I know that means a lot to the team.
It does. It's just awesome. I mean, Glendive is an amazing place, and the people of Glendive are so generous and so giving, and, you know, they feel like they're a part of us as much as we are, and they are. And, you know, we wouldn't be here right now if it wasn't the support we had in Glendive at our home games and those fans cheering and screaming and going crazy. We went 15-0 at home this year. And then when we qualified for nationals, just all of the people baking cookies and just giving money to the program to help offset the cost of it. I mean, it's just awesome. I mean, it really is. And not just Glendive, but around the state of Montana, you know, so many of the coaches at the four-year level, so many high school coaches have been wishing me good luck and said they're cheering for us. And I mean, I think one thing I love so much about Montana is it's a huge state, but it's such a small world and a small, you know, small state as far as people and so on. And I think I hope that we can represent Glendive, but I hope we can represent Montana really, really well on this national stage with people all over the country here. So we're trying to do that, not just on the court representing the state of Montana well, but we're trying to do it off the court as well, how we behave, how we interact with people at the hotel, at the shopping center or restaurants or at the games.
Have a lot of confidence that you're doing that, Coach. Thank you very much. Good luck. Go out there and get them, huh?
Yeah, we're excited. We appreciate it. It's good to be on the show, Tom. I just appreciate you guys having us. So thank you.
Bucks head coach Joe Peterson, great interview. Very excited about that. A lot of folks are, I know. You can catch it. My friend Andrew Sterloxen from Glendive Broadcasting is there in Hutchinson, Kansas. That game tomorrow at 9 o'clock our time. Yeah, we're going to be preempted for that. 96.5 KDZN. Also, it's streamed live, KXGN.com. Good luck to the Bucks. Bridger Malum, Montana Chamber, up next here on Voices. And later on, we're going to talk with Chuck Deneau. There is a rally tonight in Lewistown, Fergus County High School. Got some speakers, special speakers there, American Stewards for Liberty. This is put on by United Property Owners of Montana, also sponsored by Fergus County Farm Bureau and the Fergus County Livestock Association, to talk about what this 30 by 30, well, they call it a land grab. It's an executive order by the Biden administration.
And it's part of a broad-based executive order tackling the climate crisis at home and abroad. There's always something in the details there. So that rally, we'll unpack that tonight a little more. Might have some follow-up on Tuesday on that, but we'll have Chuck on in just a bit to talk. Well, a little bit later on. We've got some business here first. So let's see. Let's get down to business. Who am I turning this meeting over to? Bridger Ballum is with us now, Government Relations Director, Montana Chamber of Commerce. Bridger, been there for a while, since 2016, and just all over the place when it comes to this legislative session, Bridger. Thank you for being here. Appreciate that. How many pairs of shoes have you worn out?
Tom, I think I'm in my second or third pair now, yep. But I'll tell you, I'm more perplexed by the recent weather, if anything, because I went out mountain biking yesterday, right? And yeah. I sunburned the back of my neck, and I wake up this morning having to shovel myself out of the driveway to get myself to the office for this interview. So I'm going through a ton of pairs of shoes at this point for various reasons.
Love that. There's nothing you can do but appreciate it, I suppose.
It's Montana for you.
Where'd you mountain bike at?
Well, I went out to the Stress Gravel Hills just outside of Helena. It was a good warm-up to see if I still remembered how to do it.
Yeah, I bet it's fun to get back on there after a long winter and after a hard session, too. I know how hard that the chamber works, how hard a lot of these associations and organizations work at the legislative session. We talked with the chairman of the board for the chamber, Paul Hopoff, and you earlier in the year to talk about, you know, as you laid out your legislative agenda here, there were a number of bills, just kind of really a handful that were some of your key items. And right off the bat, HB 65 took care of one of those things. Let's see, give us an overview of those key items that you guys are still tracking and still interested in.
Yeah, Tom, and again, that's the role of the Chamber, of course, is to try to build the most optimal business climate that we can for the state of Montana to attract that investment. And as a result, every legislative session, we're personally involved in more than 100 pieces of legislation, whether we're supporting it or opposing it. But we often come in with our own set of core priorities per session, and it's always harder to pass a bill than to kill one. And so we usually go into these legislative sessions thinking about somewhere between 2 and 5 bills that are really going to be our mantelpieces for the session should we get them through. And I'm proud to say that we're on our way to having all 4 of our key priorities passed this session. And, of course, you mentioned at the top there, Tom, Senate Bill 65, business liability protections related to COVID, got that through the session and was really a comfort for business owners knowing that the legislature and the governor were looking out for their well-being when it comes to the recovery efforts. Happy to see that signed in February. We also put forward some comprehensive, meaningful reform to Montana's unique Wrongful Discharge Act. We extended the employee probationary period and did a few other important reforms in that part of employment law to make that more predictable for Montana businesses. House Bill 254 passed the legislature and was signed by the governor here just last month. And then finally, we had 2 other priority tort reform bills. And Tom, I think I'll touch on one of those specifically because I think it's going to be meaningful to a lot of the agriculture-based folks that tune in regularly to the entire suite of Northern Broadcasting programming. And that is Senate Bill 338, which just passed the legislature last week. We put forward a bill to ensure that no land possessor, whether it's a piece of farmland or a piece of machinery for your business, that they aren't liable if a trespasser or some unwanted person gets onto that property or machinery and injures themselves. And this is beyond just the existing recreational immunity. And this is now in all cases. If there's an uninvited person on your property and they do damage or harm to themselves or your property, you're no longer liable for their injuries. And that should be signed by the governor here next week. So we're really excited about the priorities that we're moving, Tom.
That's one that I noted as I looked at the business climate. You've got some you kind of broke this up a little bit, workforce development, infrastructure investment, entrepreneurial sustainability, and then this one under business climate. Businesses, well, just kind of go into that a little bit. I mean, the liability, it's almost, what is it? I hate to say it's a crapshoot, but, when it comes to liability laws and businesses, It's really hard to get definitive understanding of what the business is liable for and what individuals are liable for.
Yeah, Tom, a predictable legal climate is becoming more and more often a factor of businesses determining whether to expand or bring their operations to Montana or some other state, maybe a neighboring state, that has shown to be a little more predictable on that front. And this isn't to say that businesses just want the court rulings to be in their favor every time. We just want to know if the goalposts are going to remain the same and not change while the football is still in the air. And that's why the Montana Chamber is really one of the most involved advocacy organizations when it comes to advocating for a reasonable legal environment in which judges aren't legislating from the bench. And of course, the third branch of government, Tom, of course, is there to interpret the law and fill in the gaps where the legislature hasn't created an interpretation. And so when we see if there are areas where those gaps are still existing, that's where we, the chamber, feel like it's important to be visiting with the legislature and the executive about what those are so that we can provide intent to the judicial branch on how to handle these going forward, and so that in these court cases, we're seeing more consistent outcomes that follow precedent rather than just throwing a dart at the wall and seeing where it goes.
Bridger Malum, Government Relations Director for the Montana Chamber of Commerce. The chamber represents over 750 member entities. It's the state's largest business to Main Street mom and pop organization out there, and have been busy in this legislative session. Still a lot to unpack here. We'll do that. The session's not over. There's some bills out there. I think that it's kind of hard to understand where they stand. Bridger Malum will help us with that here in just a bit after these headlines from Brian Bennett. Native of Big Fork, Montana, Bridger Malum is with us, former government affairs consulting firm worker in Washington, D.C. Was also a page in the Montana State Senate. Served as an intern with Montana U.S. Senator John Tester at Wake Forest University 2014, and now the Government Relations Director with the Montana Chamber of Commerce. And thanks, Bridger, for your time here. Let's see. We got just less than 3 minutes in this segment and more time to unpack some things here. We've got tax bills that I think are still outstanding. There's probably still some workforce development bills that are outstanding there. Where do you want to go?
Yeah, Tom, why don't we start with on the taxation front, because Governor Gianforte, as part of his Montana comeback plan, came out with a suite of bills designed to, as a package, create a more attractive tax climate for Montana, for individual Montanans and Montana businesses to be more attracted to. And we've been supportive of pretty much that entire suite of bills, everything from the reductions in business equipment tax to an elimination of the capital gains tax for brand new businesses to help that entrepreneurial spirit continue to thrive in Montana. I think, Tom, what's going to be important to watch with this suite of legislation, around five or so bills that have yet to pass the legislature, is that they're waiting to learn. The legislature and both the governor are waiting to identify and create language for these bills that will ensure that these tax reductions would not compromise the state's eligibility for federal COVID relief money that's being appropriated in House Bill 632. So I think we're all hoping we can have our cake and eat it too on this, and there's just going to be a little bit more work to be done with the fine tuning of contingency clauses, et cetera. And it might mean that some of these bills are delayed by a couple of years before they're effective. But it's going to be important to be able to achieve this meaningful tax reform while at the same time accepting and allocating those federal COVID dollars that we have to use or lose, Tom.
What's meaningful? We got less than a minute here. What's meaningful in the tax reform? A lowering of the corporate rate, or what's going to help most?
Tom, I think one of the most important things for small business, especially Montana-based small manufacturers, is the proposal to raise the exemption on business equipment tax to $200,000 of market value of your equipment instead of the first $100,000. That is estimated to remove an additional, I think, 3,500 to 4,000 businesses from the business equipment tax rolls completely. And so we've just always thought of this as a punitive tax relative to how other states do their tax structure. And for that many more businesses to be off the rolls should this bill pass, House Bill 303, that's going to be a really strong signal for Montana's business plan.
Lots more to cover here. We look at Bridger Malum, or look at our state legislature with Bridger Malum here from the chamber in a bit.
Voices of Montana continues right after this.
You're listening to a podcast from the live Voices of Montana radio show. Be sure to check out the full podcast page at voicesofmontana.com for a full listing of all our programs. We've been covering Montana issues for more than 20 years. Thanks for listening today.
The fastest hour in Montana radio continues. Call 1-866-627-5483 and join Montana's statewide radio talk show, Voices of Montana, with Tom Schultz.
Well, is it a public land grab or necessary to tackle a climate crisis? The 30 by 30 program initiated by an executive order from the Biden administration. And this was just recently, well, actually late January. We'll talk about that. A rally upcoming in Lewistown tonight, but unpacking that here today a bit later is Chuck Deneau. I'm Tom Schultz. Welcome back here to Monday, can't trust that day, edition of Voices of Montana with Bridger Malum, the Government Relations Director with the Montana Chamber of Commerce. And again, as I mentioned, the chamber's been around since 1931, the state's largest leading business advocate. Bridger, I appreciate your time here. I'm looking at the governor's schedule today, and there is a bill signing, a remote bill signing for HB 252, the Montana Trades Education Credit, the MTEC bill. You guys had workforce development kind of at the top of your list, because as I have met with business owners and chatted with them, the labor pool is short. It's hard to get good workers nowadays.
Tom, the workforce development is undoubtedly the number one thing we're hearing from across the spectrum of our membership when it comes to industry, geography, size, what have you. House Bill 252, the tax credit for employer-paid education and trade professions is something that we support. It was also Governor Gianforte's, one of his priorities for workforce development. We think that's going to help incentivize more business owners to continue to invest in the great talent that they already have and make them and help them upskill with those workers to make them even more productive members of that business. And that's not the only thing that we've been trying to do to continue to support workforce development in Montana. We've also looked at what are some other barriers that have been preventing business owners from getting more involved in career and technical education and work-based learning. A couple things I'd highlight here, that bills that have already been signed that thankfully didn't require a fiscal note were House Bill 282 and House Bill 283. Representative Fred Anderson of Great Falls had worked with us on a couple really great bills. And what they do is one of them reduces the minimum age for student-aged learners to go into the workplace and be involved in a workplace learning opportunity as part of getting credit for classes. And then another one, and this is overlooked a little bit, businesses, Tom, have shied away from doing some work-based learning work on their own premises because of the uncertainty when it comes to who is responsible for workers' compensation on that student learner. And House Bill 283 had clarified that an arrangement needs to take place, whether it's the business owner or the school that has the student-based learner. One of those two entities needs to supply the workers' compensation insurance for that student learner. And so, Tom, I think the bottom line is it's not always just about how do we fund career and technical education. We're obviously supportive of that. That's part of why we're watching House Bill 2, the overall state budget bill, because there's going to be some funding for that. But there's just been some barriers that we've needed to overcome, and we've been able to solve some of those legislatively. So we're really excited to try to find some more ways to help provide a stronger pipeline of talent for our businesses in the state.
Yeah, I think we'd see a growing trend here. What's the numbers behind this when it comes the growing trend being workers or employers, I should say, understanding they can take training in you know, under their own house, so to speak, and develop their own workforce. What's the numbers behind this bill?
So, Tom, I guess I don't really have any specific numbers on me at the moment, but I think it's starting to show even the trend when it comes to how we're funding career and technical education programming in the state. And the education community is starting to get behind this new trend as well, is that it's not necessarily about just funding for new equipment at the school shop class, but instead, how do we create new learning pathways that involve the students going into the workplace where they already have the latest equipment and the latest and greatest workplace learning experience, and developing those partnerships further. So just even seeing the trend move away from just funding shop class to how do we use our dollars wisely to form new partnerships with the business community? I think, I don't have specific numbers on me, Tom. I think the trend is showing that the numbers will be going that direction soon.
Yeah, I mean, and the nice thing about that, too, is that you're developing skills, maybe specifically for a specific job, but you're developing lifetime skills for all these workers, too. So even as our workforce becomes more and more of a transitory nature, in a way, the workforce development is going to pay in a lot of ways. There's a story I want to relate from comments that I heard. We were recently out during our tow rope tour and chatted with some businesses, and a couple related the story about they had specific numbers about a number of job interviews with prospective workers. They wanted to fill a certain number of open positions, and in one business they had 6 interviews lined up. Not one applicant showed up. There was another business that were trying to fill 6 positions, and they scheduled 9 interviews. Only 2 of the applicants showed up for that, and neither of them said they wanted a job. They're only here to meet their unemployment requirements. Just comment on that. Is that something we're seeing? I understood going into the expanded benefits and the federal unemployment insurance that it wasn't necessarily anticipated to be a problem, but it's starting to, I think, crop up a little bit, isn't it?
Tom, I really appreciate that you brought up those anecdotes, and we're starting to hear similar stories. And of course, that's translating into concern from our perspective as Montana's leading general business advocate, because we too saw understood at least the need to expand some of these programs just in the midst of an unprecedented time, not knowing how long it's going to take, and trying to buoy our workforce as we go. But yeah, now we're starting to see the backlash of how some of these programs and how they might not be aging as well. And not to say that unemployment insurance and unemployment benefits should go away, but when we're running into folks finding that unemployment benefits are paying out more than getting that job or maintaining that job, that's creating some long-term problems for these business owners, as you described, aren't getting qualified applicants, or if they are, they're just doing it to fulfill the requirements. So, Tom, that's exactly why we and other business trade associations are meeting with the governor's office, with the Department of Labor and Industry, to start raising these concerns and begin brainstorming with those entities about how to maintain the program for its intended purpose, but also to be considering what tweaks do we need to make to ensure that we aren't having this opposite and unintended effect of those unemployment benefits programs, Tom. So it's a really important point, and it's going to be something that the Chamber is going to be spending a lot of time on, especially once session wraps up, and this phenomenon won't necessarily be done by then. So we'll be paying great attention and acting accordingly.
Yeah, I think the extended unemployment benefits at the federal level in this latest American Rescue Plan package all the way up and through September. So, essentially 2 years of unemployment benefits is it's a disincentive. I think it's pure and simple. I'm not sure what you guys can do about it, though. I mean, I suppose the idea about discussing it is to identify and draw attention to the problem. But is there any policy changes that can address this?
Well, and that's what we're analyzing now. And of course, those conversations I had mentioned are of course at the state level. And we of course have a great relationship with our entire federal delegation, and knowing especially that the Senate is sitting at 50-50, our Montana senators have a great sway in continuing conversations about issues like this. And that's why it's important for us to continue to supply those anecdotes and stories to our federal delegation when these conversations, when we get closer to September what that's going to mean. I mean, I'm hearing talk, Tom, on the federal level, on the House side, about changing, going even further, what we think might be in the wrong direction, in that there's some legislation pending that would allow folks to claim unemployment benefits for issues, for reasons that weren't even related to work. And so we're going to have to keep working with our congressional delegation on this just as much as the Governor Gianforte and our agencies at the state level. We don't have a precise answer yet because we're still recovering from an unprecedented time, but it's emerging as a top priority for our business owners as they try to get people interviewed and lined up for work.
Real quickly, Bridger, any talk about inflation worries out there in the business world?
Tom, I don't have a whole lot on that at this point. I haven't heard a ton yet, but I know that at least for me, my focus has been so much in the Capitol that perhaps some of my other colleagues have heard some things. But we'll certainly circle back with you if we are coming up with some interesting anecdotes on that front. But I guess I'll close my comments on that, Tom, by saying that we're always welcome to hear from you, the listeners, about what's going on the ground for you, because I mean we're a small staff at the chamber. We do everything we can to represent you, especially at the legislative level and with our congressional delegation. But we're only as good and effective as the stories and perspectives that small business owners bring to us, and that helps us be more engaging and more effective than ever when we're able to have that. So please visit MontanaChamber.com. Find the contact information on there and visit with us about what are your business challenges, because our work never ends at sine die of a legislative session. We are your 24/7, 365 business advocate, and we need to hear from you about what your challenges are so that we can guide our priorities accordingly.
Yep, phone number, email, everything's out there on the website, MontanaChamber.com. Thanks, Bridger. Appreciate that. We'll chat with you down the road.
Thank you, Tom.
Government Relations Director with the Chamber of Commerce, Chuck Deneau, is standing by. He's with the United Property Owners of Montana. We'll talk about this rally tonight in Lewistown, about the 30 by 30, quote-unquote, land grab. Back with more Voices in a bit. From Montana, for Montana, it's Voices of Montana. We were just in central Montana, the Save the Cowboy area of our state, as United Property Owners of Montana. Very big in that area in terms of defending our public lands and our private property rights. They've got a rally going on in Lewistown. Listeners there, KXLO at 12:30 a.m. It was great to visit with you last week. But this is tonight at 7 o'clock at Fergus High School Auditorium. And this is their speakers are going to be from the American Stewards of Liberty. They'll be talking about this, what they call a land grab. Chuck Deneau joins us here from United Property Owners of Montana to talk a little bit more about this executive order. And Chuck, thanks for your time. Appreciate that. We just only have, you know, like about 4 minutes to unpack this. But what is this 30-30 program?
Sure. And thanks for having me, Tom. So this 30 by 30 program, what that means is it's an executive order from the Biden administration. They're calling on taking 30% of American land out of production by the year 2030. And the scale of this thing really is breathtaking. They're talking about taking 440 million acres out of production permanently and doing it over the next 10 years. That's an area twice the size of Texas. All of this is going to happen in the West. Montana's ground zero for this program. So what that means is we're going to see new federal designations for things like wildlife refuges, national monuments, wilderness areas, that sort of thing, and taking that land out of production permanently. So it's got some really big potential impacts for Montana's economy, especially in our rural areas.
I guess the next question is this constitutional? Is this something that they can do in such a short time without Congress, without public input?
Well, they're certainly going to try. I mean, this is not the system that our founding fathers envisioned to be governing the presidential dictate. But that's where we're at. This president has issued more executive orders than at any point in history, and really calling on doing some pretty radical things just through executive order. So this is what we're facing. We've got to be ready to fight it. That's what this rally tonight is all about, is getting people educated about what's coming and what we need to do to fight back.
You know, the claim is, and this is quote-unquote executive order 14008, tackling the climate crisis at home and abroad. Will we understand if this is going to be effective in their agenda toward affecting our climate? What's the science and the data say about these things?
Well, the science is conclusive on this. Doing these sorts of measures has no impact on climate change. You know, most of this land is, it's timberland, it's rangeland, it's being managed in a responsible way now. Nobody cares more about the land, air, and water than our farmers and ranchers in Montana. So it's already land that's protected, that's conserved. Really what we're talking about is just taking it out of production, destroying that local economy. And I think what it ultimately results in is parts of Montana just being depopulated because we won't have the economic base there anymore. So in terms of climate change, that's a convenient excuse here, but it really does nothing to address climate change.
All right, it's 7 o'clock tonight, Fergus High School Auditorium, Lewistown, Montana, the 30 by 30 land grab. If you're interested in finding out more about what this is, take that in, and we may have a follow-up tomorrow on that. Chuck, appreciate the work you do. Thanks for stopping in real quick.
You bet. Thank you.
All right. Good luck to those Bucks tomorrow as well. 96.5 KDZN for the broadcast in that national tournament. And until then, have a great day. We'll see you then.
You've been listening to Voices of Montana. Comments and opinions heard are those of the host or callers and not necessarily those of this station, sponsors, or Northern News Network. Join us Monday through Friday at 9:06 for Voices of Montana.